Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. We are pleased with our panelists today, speaking about young leaders, and Mr. Dirk Sonneborn, who is the president of the Gifford Foundation, is on hand to introduce them.
Good morning. This is genuinely a pleasure for me, because I think each of these women are friends of mine. So it's kind of neat that I get to introduce them to you. Sheena Solomon, sitting closest to me, is a coworker of mine. Pam Brunet from Leadership Greater Syracuse, and Santrana Allen from 754, the barbershop and the media company. I'm going to give you a little bit more about them, but they truly are my friends, and so it's a genuine honor for me to introduce them. I'm going to start with Pam. Many of you may know Pam. Pam is the executive director of Leadership Greater Syracuse and an enthusiastic community advocate who has a great ability to build collaboration among a variety of stakeholders. And she has a strong sense of strategic vision with great project management skills, public speaking skills, and writing skills. We're going to test her public speaking skills today. Pam has worked in the Syracuse area for nearly 30 years. Most of her professional experience was obtained when she worked as a community relations manager at Bristol-Myers Squibb. She received a bachelor's degree in journalism and public relations from my alma mater, Utica College.
Really?
You didn't know that, did you? I didn't know that you were an apple pie blue ribbon winner. Pam exemplifies the Leadership Greater Syracuse mission. Soon after she graduated from LGS, she started volunteering for Hope for Bereaved. She served as president of that board of directors as well. She's currently serving as a member of the TMR Advisory Committee, a member of the Onondaga Citizens League Steering Committee, and as a session speaker for the Center State CEO Executive Leadership Development Series, where she teaches the return on investment of civic engagement. Pam and her husband live in Lafayette, where they enjoy a rural lifestyle. And as I said, she's a two-time blue ribbon winner at the Lafayette Apple Festival in the Apple Pie Contest. Farthest from me is Santrana Allen. Santrana is a great-great-granddaughter of a runaway slave. At a young age, she took fast to business concepts as she worked in her grandfather's fields, picking cayenne peppers. And as she got older, she assumed more responsibilities on the farm. She knew at a young age that she wanted to change the world, and against her mother's wishes, she proudly joined and served our country as a military police in the United States Army, where she received numerous merits and awards. She was attached to several military police investigation units. She stood alongside her company at the ready in Schofield Barracks, Hawaii, on September 11th, as those events unfolded. The hardest assignment she had was the months of funeral detail, when she folded numerous deceased service members' final flags and presented sentiments on behalf of the president and our country. Upon receiving her honorable discharge from the Army, Santrana decided to attend Sheer Ego International Hair School, where she was the only female in her class and where she graduated at the top of her class. And from there, in 2007, 11 years ago, Santrana stepped out on faith and opened 754 Barbershop on North Salina Street in Syracuse, which continues to be a pillar in the community. Through her barbershop, she advocated for young people in the LGBT community, creating a safe space for them to congregate and discuss their ideas. Santrana has used the barbershop to partner with Golisano Children's Hospital to form Arms Wide Open campaign, asking her clients to donate toys to kids who are in the infectious disease unit fighting HIV or AIDS. She and others volunteer regularly at the rescue mission, cutting hair for patrons there. She drove a truck, which is one of my favorite stories about Santrana. She drove a truck filled with bottled water to Flint, Michigan, frustrated that the residents there struggled with their water issues. She volunteered, asked her friends and her clients to donate water, and she rented a truck and drove it out to Flint. She's worked on becoming fluent in Spanish, as she has ambitions to be an advocate not only for the people that look like her, but those that are silenced because we can't understand them. She's a member of the Board of Trustees of the Gifford Foundation and an alum of Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders. Finally, it's my pleasure to introduce Sheena Solomon. Are you worried about what I'm going to say, Sheena?
Not at all. I'll correct it.
It's hard to correct the truth, Sheena. Anyhow, Sheena Solomon is Director of Neighborhood Initiatives at the Gifford Foundation, where she has been for almost 11 years. Sheena is deeply engaged in community organizing within the city, which includes regular communication and meetings with local activists and residents. Sheena was essential in the creation and implementation of Gifford's citywide initiative, the What If Mini Grant, which provides a resource in fostering growth in neighborhoods and strengthening the capacity of residents who are focused on making positive changes in their neighborhoods. Sheena has partnered and advised with the Health Foundation for Western and Central New York on neighborhood issues, served on the advisory committee of the Leadership Classroom, a project of the Central New York Community Foundation. Sheena is a 2012 graduate of the Places Fellowship Program, a year-long professional development program designed to explore key issues that affect grant-making decisions that are responsive to the needs and assets of low-income neighborhoods and people of color all across the country. A very significant accomplishment to have been selected and participate. And she now serves on the advisory board for that program. She also dedicates her time by serving on local and national boards, including the Grassroots Grantmakers, You Can't Fail, Inc., the Syracuse Economic Development Corporation, and the Near West Side Initiative, where she was pushed into the slot of being chair of the board there through some transitions that were occurring. She has a passion for fostering growth in others and the patience and understanding that many in society need. She truly believes the teaching people how to fish concept is the best way to build strong, vibrant communities and the true value that diversity and inclusion bring to communities and organizations. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time with her family, which she shares with us on staff at the Gifford Foundation. She's been instrumental in designing and planning of Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders, and you're going to hear more about that from her now. And are you up first, Sheena?
I am. Good morning, everyone. How are you? Oh my God, I need a little bit more energy from you guys. I know it's early, but I just need a little bit more energy. So we're going to try one more time. Good morning, everyone. Oh, thank you so very much. I appreciate that. So I'm Sheena. Dirk did a really great job of introducing us all. I feel like I have this high bar that I need to live up to now. So we'll see how well I do. As you said, I've been at the Gifford Foundation for 11 years. I'm the Director of Neighborhood Initiatives. And one special thing that I get to do is work in our neighborhoods. And what makes me a little bit different than the average program person at a foundation is a lot of them actually don't get to go out and work in the field and work with everyday people doing extraordinary things. And I get to do that, and I get to bring that into my objective when I'm looking at grants every day. The Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders program in itself was an idea that I developed over frustration. And you know, a lot of ideas that come out into our community are either through frustration or something that pulled at your heartstrings that you were like, you know what, we really need to do something about this particular thing. So as a program person at the foundation, what I do is I review applications. I take a look at what the organization is, what they do, how they do it, why they're the best organization to do it. Look at their financials. But one thing we also look at is their board makeup. And one thing that I noticed that was very common is that our nonprofit boards do not reflect the community at which they serve. The foundation is very specific about looking at diversity and inclusiveness as a part of what we are and what we do. But one thing that we were not doing very well was we'd look at a board and we say, oh, it needs some diversity. And we would send the organization a diversity letter. I know, right? A letter, right? That said, what is your diversity plan? And then we'd get a, well, this is our diversity plan. This is what we've tried. We've had people of color on our board. Can't keep people on our board. But, you know, this is who our board is. Like, accept it. It's like, okay, well, maybe we don't want to accept that. Why do we need to accept the status quo, right? Particularly, we bring people on boards that most likely will look like us because that's what our circles look like. So we are doing our best to challenge nonprofits to not do that anymore because that's a disservice to our community. Because you don't have diversity and perspective if you don't have diversity in the room. So we develop Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders. We develop Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders through this fact that 86% of our nonprofit boards are Caucasian. So we went in thinking, you know what, this should be, Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders should be a program for people of color. And then when we came together with our partners, which is the Gifford Foundation, Leadership Greater Syracuse, Central New York Community Foundation, HSLC, which is Human Service Leadership Council, and a host of residents from the community, we decided that it shouldn't be an exclusive program. It should be inclusive. We're talking about inclusion, but we're excluding people from the program. And we're thinking about diversity the same way that everybody else thinks about it. We think in race first, when diversity is not just race. So let's have a conversation about really being inclusive. So we started to look at all dynamics. We looked at race. We looked at gender, because most boards are full with men. We looked at age, because the average board member is about 65. So we looked at age. We looked at socioeconomic diversity, because that's a huge issue on our nonprofit boards, right? Most board members are CEOs, executive directors, business owners. We're not really looking at the different socioeconomics that the board person can actually bring to the table. We also looked at disabilities. How many people have walked into a boardroom and actually seen someone with a disability? Okay, so we have a couple, two is not bad, but there should be more hands in the air, right? So looking at some of those, we also looked at education as well. So these are all dynamics that we look at when we're looking at our Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders program. The program started in 2014 with a mission to be inclusive, to increase the pool of effective board members, to enhance the pool of new leaders and community, and to educate and inspire, and then also provide a quality training. So that's the quick history of Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders. I'm gonna pass the mic to my partner, Pam, who is gonna go over some of the stats of the program and give you some facts about the program. You want me to talk about the curriculum? It's okay. She wants me to talk about the curriculum. Which is pretty easy for me. I can do it with my eyes closed, right? So when we were putting the class together, we're like, what as a board member should you need to know sitting at the table, right? Well, first you need to know your legal responsibilities, right? So what legally are you responsible for, and your fiduciary responsibilities? Because we know that boards have fallen asleep at the wheel around that fiduciary responsibility. So let's make sure we're looking at what money's coming in, what money's going out, and who is in charge of that, right? We also decided, how do boards add value? That's really important. A lot of people come to the table with the perception of what you should be when you're sitting at the table as a board member, or the values that you bring to the table. And we kind of knock those perceptions out of the park, right? You don't have to be a CEO of KeyBank to be on a board. You could be an everyday person. It really depends on what the nonprofit is and what you can actually bring to the table. We talk about group dynamics. In every situation, you're in group dynamics, whether you're sitting around the kitchen table or whether you're sitting at the board table. Group dynamics always takes play. So how does that work at the table? And what happens if you're the only person that looks like you at the table? How do you handle that situation? How do you deal with it? So we have those conversations. Planting a tree of diversity. Why is diversity important? What do you bring to the table and all the different types of diversity that individuals bring to the table? Collaboration and conflict resolution. That's always an issue, even at home or in the boardroom, right? There's always can be some type of conflict. How do you deal with it? We can't jump across the table and choke people because we didn't like their decision, right? So we have to figure out, we can't, no. Listen, we can't do, I was told it's illegal. So you can't quite do that. So we got to figure out how to do with that. Making the connection is where we actually have a board meeting. We bring them into a room and have an actual board meeting. And we actually have Heidi Holtz, who was in a room. She actually designs the different characters of people who are on the board. So it's that person who says, you can't do this because I fund this whole organization. You have that person who volunteers for everything. You have the person who doesn't say much at the board. So all that, we create the dynamics of the board and people get the role play and actually see what it feels like to be on the board. The art of networking. Networking is pretty interesting. We actually added that 2 years ago because networking is really important because in a boardroom, you have the ability to do that. You have the ability to build your human resources. So networking with people is really important and learning how to do that is also important. At our last class that we had, Sean Brannigan taught networking. And the one thing that everybody left with was when you're having a conversation with someone, how do you stand? And Sean said, stand like this. It's very calm. It's not intimidating. Don't put your hands in your pocket. Don't put your hands on your hips. Just stand nice and calm. Or if you're talking to someone who's in a wheelchair, who was in the class with us, people are like, we're not really sure like how to communicate. And he said, well, just sit down. I want to look at you eye to eye. I don't want to be looking up at you because I'm looking up at people all day. If you want to sit and have a conversation, actually sit down and become eye level with me. So just some tips like that. And then graduation, which is a party. We all know Gifford knows how to throw a party. If you don't know, you need to find out about it. We always get really good food. We have a nice time. They graduate, and then we do networking. We invite nonprofits to come to graduation and do some speed dating so people actually get to meet nonprofits face-to-face. So that is how we celebrate the class, and people receive a certificate of completion. They have to attend at least 7 out of the 8 classes in order to graduate and receive the certificate of completion that they actually complete the program.
Thank you, Sheena. So this is Pam Brunet. What Sheena didn't say was this is the brainchild of Sheena Solomon. And when she called me, when I was only on the job like 6 weeks, I was just so inspired by her and by her passion. I said, we have to do something because I had been in this community for 30 years. And everybody said, a lot of nonprofits were well-intended. They wanted all types of diversity on their board, but they can't find people. And what has been the most eye-opening thing for me in now year 4 of this program is, guess what? We're just not connecting people. There are so many amazing people in our community who want to give back and give back at a high level. And it's just that we are not connecting them. So the moral of the story for me is that when you put the right people, all day long we hear, you have to be diverse. You have to have all the right people around the table. Well, when we sat in the NTL planning sessions and I got to feel it, I mean feel it from my heart and my head, what it felt like to be in a room with people that brought different things to the table. It was very powerful, and I think this program is a testament to what we each brought, and the results are pretty remarkable, I think, so I'm hoping you're going to agree with me. But we all know the right thing to do, but doing it is hard, and then when we do the right thing, the outcomes are just tremendous, and to experience it firsthand is an incredibly powerful situation. So my hats are off to Sheena and Gifford for supporting all this from taking place, and of course the Community Foundation as well. So it's all about the demographics and the outcomes. So excited that we started tracking stuff right along the way. Oh, what Sheena didn't mention is it is now a 9-week program, and each session runs 2.5 hours. It's only $50 to participate. We felt the need to charge some money for this, and there are some folks where that might be out of reach, so we do have tuition assistance available for people to participate. But we also know people had to have a little skin in the game to show up because they get the best food as well. The food's really great. But I want people in the room to think about 2.5 hours times 9. That's like, I don't know, I don't do math. That's like a lot of content on board, being on a board. How many of us in this room have been put on a board and you just show up at the first meeting and you're like, oh, okay. And then you start doing this little thing where you're trying to figure out this dance of who's responsible for what and governance and the difference between what you're allowed the executive director to do. that kind of stuff. So to have that many hours of content on how to teach someone to be a good board member, the right questions to ask before even going on a board. How many people have just said, hey, Pam, you want to be in the board? Oh, my gosh, I'm so honored to be asked. Of course, yes. You get there and you're like, $1,000 per person? You don't even know something to say, like, what is directors and officers insurance? So many people go on boards without having the right information. So that many hours of content is pretty powerful to have for anybody on the boards. So it's all about the numbers. We have trained 110 people in our 4 years. And our first way of looking at demographics is to talk about race and diversity and ethnic diversity. Of the 110, we've trained 52 African-Americans, 8 Asian, 1 biracial, 28 Caucasian, 1 Eastern European, 11 Hispanic, 1 Middle Eastern, 1 Sudanese, 1 Somali, and 6 others. So I'm so proud of this demographic because especially when you see some of the new Americans as well, I mean, everybody in the room it's a pretty powerful experience to be in a room. And me as a Caucasian female, to be in the room of minority has been a great personal experience for me too. So we've got that many qualified leaders available in our community. When we look at gender, 36% of the folks that were trained were males and 64% are females. We are attractive to females. So if you know more males that want to apply to LGS, we're going to go into that in a minute. Applications are currently available. I'll step back 1 second. When we were piloting the program, we said, if we can get 15 people, it's the first year. Wouldn't 15 people be great? We would feel good about 15. 30. Put in applications, and we're like, okay, there's a demand. And now we've had, on average, so we just have the applications out right now. Within 24 hours, we had 25 applications in our hand, and we're going to be up to 60. Year over year now, we've had over 60 people apply to be in the program. We'll accept as many as we possibly can, probably around 30 to make it a great experience. That number works great. But of that group, 64% have been female, 36% have been males. And these are the demographics across all 4 years we've been running the program. Age is tremendous, under 21 years old, right up to over 60. So 33% are between 31 and 40 years old. Love. I think we've had a high school student, haven't we? So the age demographics have just been wonderful in the room. And just like at Leadership Greater Syracuse, when we're filling the class, when you have more people that you have room for, you start making these decisions on what do we want this class to look like? What are the age demographics? We don't need all 34 people age 34 from the for-profit sector. We want a combination, right? So did I skip over that? Age. So when we look at the demographics with board experience, the purpose of this program is to get people on boards. So there are many people in the community who've expressed interest in this program who've been on boards for 20 years or 10 years or 6 years, and it's very valuable for anybody who's currently on a board. But we said we want people with 0 or less than 3 years of experience on a board. This is about connecting new people to our community. Again, building the pool of effective leaders in our community. So we have 65% of the folks who have participated over the last 4 years have no board experience whatsoever, and 35% have had less than 3 years of experience. So this is fresh. Our nonprofits people should be really excited about these people who are now available. They're ripe. In terms of education, another thing that was just phenomenal, we ask everybody, and we absolutely ask everybody for all levels, you know, where are you at with your education? So we go from some high school to some college, associate's, bachelor's, master's, and professional degrees. And it's pretty telling that 34%, oh man, Sheena, help me with the colors. 34% are bachelor's, 26% are master's degrees. And we had like 3 doctorals. I mean, it's just crazy great. All these amazing, wonderful people who believe in our community and who want to give back, who we haven't traditionally been connecting to our community. So those are the demographics of the program over the last 4 years. So now we're trying to do our best to track where they have gone. So with the 110 folks who've applied, and of course we're at the mercy of them telling us where they are, not that we don't hound them and ask them where they've been involved. We know that 44 organizations at a minimum, we know there's more, have benefited from one of our graduates either on a committee or on the at the board level, and they've held over 61 volunteer positions. So for the folks who are listening on the radio, I just want to share some of the names of the places where people have chosen to give back. We know Centrana's here from the Gifford Foundation, Hiscock Legal Aid, Literacy CNY, Syracuse Poster Project, Syracuse Neighborhood, Syracuse United Neighbors, the Stand Southside Community Newspaper, Vera House, United Way, Arc Board, 100 Black Men. I mean, it's varied, right? Junior Achievement. So our folks, after they graduate from our program, are absolutely involved in the community. Is there anything more you want to add to that? She's being quiet. See, she's an early person. So this slide is really important to me, as I alluded to in the beginning. Leadership Greater Syracuse has a staff of two. Gifford has an amazing staff. Community Foundation has an amazing staff. I truly, in my heart, believe none of us could have done it alone. Gifford had an incredible idea by Sheena and a need and a demand, and it was so smart of them to invite others to the table. Sheena, with her role in neighborhoods, had a network that Leadership Greater Syracuse didn't have. Community Foundation had access to an amazing, and Gifford too, amazing amount of speakers who could be available, make themselves available to us. At Leadership Greater Syracuse, I had the corporate folks. And a lot of the corporate organizations, the bigger ones, have employee resource groups. So Joseph Searles, who's out of Excellus in Rochester, is a rock star, and he's always looking for his employees of different types and kinds of groups to be involved in the community. So when we put all of us at the table, and Sheena says that we market on purpose. We market on purpose to the audience that we need to apply to the program. And I know LGS couldn't have done it by itself. I bet you Gifford or Community Foundation could have legitimately done it on their own. But I don't think it would have been, the product wouldn't have turned out as great as it did. And having Loretta Zilkowski from the Human Services Leadership Council join us, being the customer, you know, it was tremendous to see that she could say, here's what boards are looking for. It's phenomenal. So, before we move forward, we need to hear a testament from one of our graduates. So, Centrana, I'm hoping that you'll take the time to share with us why you were interested in Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders, what did it mean for you, what you've done since you graduated, and she's just representative of one of 110 people, and she's pretty remarkable. So, here you go.
Good morning. My name is Centrana Allen. I am a board member at the Gifford Foundation. I am a U.S. Army vet. Do we have any veterans in here? Just one? Oh, two. Thank you for your service. So why did I join or decide to be a part of NTL? That was the question that Pam. Initially, when I became a board member, I thought that I didn't know anything about boards or being on a board. But ironically, I did. It was just that I was on a bigger board. I just didn't know how to make the connection, that transition. Because being a part of a platoon in the military is just like being on a board. Everyone has a different role, but there should only be one mission. So when you look at your community and all the organizations that Pam just recently had listed up there, and all the other non-for-profits in the community, the mission basically should be to move the community forward, right? So we can't do that if we all look alike, if we all think alike, if we all, if all of our groups come from the same economic background. So what I'm saying is that as a barber, I heard things from the people who had their boots on the ground. I was able to hear their experiences. Because most men know when, or ladies know when you go to the barbershop, you hear all the gossip or the complaints, right? So I was able to do that, hear that, take my experiences with that. And then, by me also sitting on the Gifford Foundation, I was able to see things from a different perspective. And that was from me asking myself, where do I view things? Am I viewing it from what I like to call the 18th floor of the Axis building, which is the money building downtown? Do I have that nice view way up there, and that's how I see the city? Or am I actually the person who lives on the south side, the person who doesn't know how to get around, or the new person who comes to Syracuse and don't know how to access anything? Or am I the refugee that moves to the north side that's supportive Catholic charities and utilize their resources? So it reminded me so much of the military. But I didn't know how to manage or utilize the tools that I had in a civilian sector. So being a part of Gifford's board, I was one of the people who sat there in silence for most of the meetings. And sometimes I still do, because I like to take it all in before I respond. I believe that when you're on a board that you have to learn how all the pieces move in order for you to be able to apply what you know and what you can bring to the table. So whether it's resources or connecting other people who are in the community and tying all those pieces together. I also had to ask myself, how can I add value to the board that I was sitting on? Those 8 weeks of NTL brought me so much insight. It was, when it came to diversity, it was pretty easy for me, as one, being a black woman. That's two right there, actually. You gotta give me two. Being from the LGBTQ community, not even being from Syracuse, New York, you know, so it just brought a whole bunch of different things together. My economics was different. It's interesting how people view you when you're a business owner, because they might not know that you might be two checks away from being a part of the working poor. But they'll view you as, oh, you're a business owner, so you're successful. So you're in a different class. So it brought classism into play, right? I understood that when advocating for people, that you should not only look for equality, but also equity. And how those two seem similar, but they're so different. I would advise anybody, if you have an opportunity to be a part of NTL or someone from your organization, that you recommend them, that you send them, you expedite that process. Because what happens is a lot of times is that boards continue to run the same way that they were ran 20 years ago, the same way they were ran 30 years ago, because it's actually some of the same people or their friends who are sitting on the boards. So it's never anybody from a different background. So you have to reach for people. And if you reach for people who have different experiences, you're gonna have those conflicts. You know, and when you have those conflicts, you just have to know how to manage those. Trying to see where do I go from here. And you also have to ask yourself, do you want to accept those legal responsibilities and not be afraid to understand those bylaws and what does all that mean? And then at the end of the day, what you get from those different 8 weeks, you have to ask yourself, am I willing and am I bold enough and am I courageous enough to take this back to my organization and apply this? Am I willing to ask people to be just as committed to change as I am? And not that we just go through this program or to continue to do business the same way that we've done business before. Because again, there should only be one mission, and that's to move the community forward. So that's all I have.
Any questions? Don't all speak at once. So while you're thinking of your question, as Pam said, we're currently accepting applications for Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders. The application deadline is March 5th. And the very first class starts on March 28th at the Philanthropy Center.
So my question is about some really concrete things about when your graduates graduate and they go out to serve on boards. What are some of the really concrete ways that boards can help them overcome barriers? So if you're working poor, you've got, you know, how many jobs you have to work, and you might not have transportation. How do you help people overcome some of those really concrete barriers to be able to participate regularly?
So that is an excellent question. I'm just going to flip it around a little bit for you, though. So I don't think that we need to necessarily take barriers out of people's way to participate. I think that we as boards and organizations need to change the way that we do things. That not expecting people to come to the table because you have a meeting at 8:30 in the morning, but someone has to get their child on the bus. Why is the meeting at 8:30? Who says it has to be at 8:30? I am the president of the Near West Side Initiative Board, and they met at 3:30 in the afternoon on a Thursday. And when I talked to my board members to find out how many people 3:30 was hard for, it was amazing how many people are like, well, I have to leave early. I got to get my kid off the bus at 5. That's why I can't stay the whole time. I try to participate, but I can't. So what did I do? I moved our meetings till 6. People can attend. They can bring their kid if they need to. It's not disruptive. And I bring a couple of snacks because it is about dinner time, right? And I find that we do business a little bit faster because people want to get in and get out. So they're very attentive. They come on time and all of those things. I also took our board meetings and moved it from the Nancy Cantor Warehouse, which is not in the neighborhood. I don't care who says it is, because it's not. I moved it to Salt Quarters, which is on Otisco Street, which is where the Near West Side Initiative owns most of their properties. That's where the people are. Why in the world are we in the warehouse on the 4th floor of the Nancy Cantor building? It's not. So I just challenge people to change what you do instead of feeling like people need to change their lifestyles. You shouldn't be on the 2nd floor with no elevator and have somebody in a wheelchair. That just doesn't make any sense. So so it's interesting because a lot of nonprofits are not necessarily ready for the people that are trained through Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders because they're not going to rubber stamp. They're going to ask questions and they're going to push the envelope. That's what we train them to do, to ask where the money is going. Why is the executive director doing this? Why do we have this program? Is it making any money? And why is everything always got to be free? Right? So pushing the envelope to ask some of these types of questions. And we need more nonprofits to be more ready for the people that we're training and be willing to accept people from where they are.
I can't help but be compelled to share the story of the one female, Sarah, who was in the class, who had just joined a board, and she's less than 30. And she said she sat in board meeting and board meeting, board meeting before, and she went to NTL, and she said, there was these things going off in my head, and I just didn't feel comfortable, and I wasn't right, but I was new. I was the youngest person on the board. I wasn't sure if I should ask it. I didn't know my place. And she was empowered. All of her questions were legitimate, and she went back after NTL and started asking more difficult questions, and I'm so proud of her, and that training empowered her to ask the questions that were absolutely appropriate for a board member to be asking.
To lighten up this discussion a little bit, an organization which I'm affiliated with, I have a frog, did a big deal on how diverse the board was. And you took look at the picture, and it really looked nicely diverse. Male, female, Caucasian, African-American, one or two looks like the Pacific Basin someplace. Wow. And then I looked at their biographies that were included. They had all graduated from one of two law schools. So,
exactly. And I think for NTL and anybody else, we really need to look at diversity in the broad definition of the word diversity. But there absolutely needs to be better and more improvement with race, for sure.
Good morning. Now that you've been in existence for 4 years, have you circled back to your graduates to find out if the program you provided to them and the information is actually what they needed, or have they been able to feed back to you with some of the things that maybe were different?
From personal experience, I definitely see that it has. It's everything that I feel like every board member should experience. This the same way I feel that every person should probably take 2 years and go into the military. I really feel that way. But if you want your board to function properly, then that experience is definitely necessary. Whether you are already sitting on the board, whether you've been there for 6 years or you're newly getting on there, because there are things that need to change, especially perspectives.
Logistically answering your question is yes. At every single session, we do surveys, and I think we did a year-end survey when we were done. So the committee then goes back and looks, and this has been tweaked. It was 8 sessions, now it's 9. I'm trying to think, we've made other slight changes as we go along to satisfy what the customers are telling us they need.
Yeah, we changed it from 2 hours to 2.5 to include dinner, so that people have that 30 minutes prior to do some networking in the room, right, and get to know each other and become a real cohort. And then we also have brought graduates and alumni to the planning committee as well to also help and make sure that we're providing them with the information that they need. And then we also, you know, have a conversation with our speakers each time. You know, how was your experience? How can we assist you? How could we do better? How can we change the class to be as interactive as possible?
You have any more information to share? I know I kind of cut you off in the middle of your presentation. You're good?
You know, I think that we have done a pretty good job of expressing the importance of nourishing tomorrow's leaders, the history of it. And I think that when you come to TMR and you learn the information, it's really important to go back in the community and be a steward of the information that you've learned, to not just keep it to yourself, but to share with others, whether it's through an email, whether it's over breakfast or lunch, share with coworkers. Because the more information that we're able to get out to people, the easier it's going to be to level the playing field in our community. Because sometimes people don't actually see being a board member as leadership development, when indeed it is leadership development. It's a decision-making entity where you have the ability to be at the table to help make decisions for the community in which you're in. And that's how we have to explain it to people. This is great leadership development to be on an actual board, to be a decision maker. Because if you're not at the table, I promise you what you want to eat will not be on the menu.
Two questions. You have 110 graduates. Are they all participating on boards? And the second thought is, how do you advertise, particularly to people who are not on boards, to get them interested in going through your class?
So everybody is not on boards. It's interesting when people graduate, sometimes they're like, this is too much and I don't want that responsibility. Which makes sense, right? At least you know. And some people want to get on boards right away. So what we know of right now is that we have 44 people on boards. And I'm sure that fluctuates because people get off and get back on and things like that. So it's an average of about 44 people that holds different types of board. I actually just got a text message yesterday that one of our visually impaired participants is now on the Arise board. So we'll bring that to 45 today. Okay. Yeah. And the Everson board was just recent. So, you know, I do a pretty good job between me and Pam of stalking people, because otherwise, how do you find out what they're doing? Like when they change their email address or change a job or get on the board, sometimes we're not the first people that they tell. But a lot of times the organization will be like, oh, we got an NTL graduate on the board. So it sounds like it's like really getting to the community. Like this is a really good thing. So getting people on boards, they have actually been on boards, or sometimes they decide, you know what, I'm not interested in being on boards. But we try to have an alumni event every year to bring the alumni back together. We also invite alumni to graduation so they can also be a part of the speed dating piece as well, because I believe the in-person perspective is really important.
Again, I feel compelled to add, when I joined the committee to help, thankfully Leadership Greater Syracuse has been around for 25, 27 years at that point, and we had a wonderful database. So we knew that Pam Brunet worked at Bristol-Myers Squibb, and she was a graduate of the class of LGS 1998. That's all I had the ability to do. Thanks to this partnership, Gifford gave LGS a grant so I could supplement my database to say Pam is Caucasian, Pam is female, Pam is interested in the arts, and Pam's expertise is in marketing. So because of this partnership now the database for all of us reside together. And now I can, when the Everson Museum calls one of us and says, I'm looking for a board member and I'd like to have an accountant, and we're a little male dominated, can we have a female? And if it can give me a minority, that'd be great. I can query the database on behalf of our organizations and help find that person. So that is the beauty of the partnership, that I didn't have that ability before, and Gifford had the opportunity to offer it. It's fantastic.
Do you assist your graduates in finding positions on boards, nonprofits? It's from my experience, it seems that, you know, it's the CEO or the president of a board that solicits membership, you know, from people in the community. And are those CEOs of the list of the nonprofits aware of your graduates, and which graduates want to go to work on which boards? You understand what I'm...
Yes, I do. In a couple different ways we can answer that question. When people apply to NTL, we ask them all kinds of questions. What is your expertise? If you're an accountant, you're an accountant. And if you're what is the cause that means something to you? That's what we put in our database. So we are tracking what their specialty is as well as what their interest is. And some people come to NTL not knowing what their interest is, and we ask them, we're going to do a speed networking thing at the end. Even if you believe in children's causes, is there a specific agency you want to learn more about? Or is it just, I believe in children's causes? So then we help, because of our knowledge of the nonprofits in the area, we help invite them to those things, to that event. And further, on the LGS website, we have an opportunity where we promote board opportunities. So nonprofits can send me a blurb on that they're looking for board members, and I post it on our website. So we drive traffic to that website, and we tell NTLers, if you're looking, NTL grads, if you're looking for a place to be on a board, go to the LGS website. So work in progress, but we absolutely are doing our best to match interest with nonprofits. And because of the HSLC, Loretta Zolkowski knows and shares with her membership, you know, that this is an opportunity of more board members. But that only represents the human services, so there are others that we have to continue to share the news.
Sheena, you made a great point about boards needing to change how they practiced in order to retain, not just attract. Do you all do coaching of boards, like training of boards, or... Okay, Pam's smiling.
I'm available. Like... but we don't, I guess we don't necessarily call it coaching. At the Gifford Foundation, we do have a board development series where boards go through a 3-part series to learn about boards, their responsibilities, diversity, and all of those different tracks. Last year, we decided to partner our board development series and NTL, where nonprofit boards... and I think it had to be at least three to four, to actually attend a 4-hour diversity course and how to welcome and onboard board members. And then when they completed that course, they was automatically invited to the Nourishing Tomorrow's Leaders graduation to actually meet the graduates and things like that. And that worked out pretty well. But we don't do any formal training. I do get asked to come to boards often to speak about Nourishing Tomorrow's Leader, what it's about. And then, you know, then I do a little bit of coaching at that time and answer some questions. But those are the two things that we have, just our board development series.
With all of the training and all of the graduates that go out there, each one of them is then going to confront an executive director who may not get it yet. How do we introduce the executive director to fully utilizing all of these now empowered individuals?
That is definitely a work in progress. Well, it is a work in progress, and I think that, you know, if we were to take a look at our leadership in our community, turnover is starting to happen a little bit. People are starting to retire. You're getting some new people in as leadership in our community. And I think that that is really going to show and prove some difference in our community, because I mean, people are doing the same thing that they've always done. And that's normal, right? We're all human and that's what we do. But when new leadership start to come in, I think that things are going to start to change and evolve a little bit. So you can't necessarily change someone's perspective or personality on how they feel about something, but you definitely can grab a new leader and really start to work on what that looks like in the future.
Thank you very much, all of you, for attending today. We appreciate it. Thank you.